Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
This is Deb Calvert, co-author of Stop Selling and Start Leading, and you're listening to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Hello and welcome to this hopefully short-lived series that will be airing in addition to the weekly Marketing Book podcast interviews. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal during this unusual time is to reconnect you with past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, share some ideas and inspiration, and maybe a much-needed laugh or two. I've interviewed over 200 authors on the show, and my plan is to continue this series until I either run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first. A word of warning, the host and guest may very likely be drinking cocktails during these conversations. I mean, come on. They are recorded during the cocktail hour. To find the show notes for each episode with pictures of each guest and links mentioned in their conversation, visit marketingbookcocktails.com. marketingbookcocktails.com. See what I did there? And if you'd like to join the conversation, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com, and I'll try to include it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat. Deb Calvert, welcome to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. How are you?
I am excellent, and what a good idea this is. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, my pleasure, and I'm excited to be able to reconnect with you, and I hope you're doing well. You're healthy?
So far, so good. Waiting for that moment when I get to go back on an airplane and visit a different city, though.
Yes, and you said you've been quarantined for, well, not traveling for a while now.
I've been really quarantined and not traveling even outside our own property for 2 months as of today when we record this, except for an occasional stop at the post office where we have a P.O. box. I have not been anywhere. I have not seen anyone but my husband. The good news is I still like him.
That's great to hear. Now, Deb Calvert, for those of us that are playing the Deb Calvert Trivial Pursuit game at home, when you went to the post office, did you by any chance go to Peculiar, Missouri?
I sure did.
So, you know, when you're up on your Deb Calvert trivia, you know that her P.O. box is in Peculiar, Missouri, which, I don't know, I think that's one of the coolest sounding places. I mean, right up there with Kalamazoo, Michigan, I think. So, now you were on – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's a great little small town. I live in a rural area, so that's my nearest town with the post office. And I live rural because my big hobby, and this is the time of year for it, is straw bale gardening. So I'm having a good time with that.
Straw bale gardening? What is that?
Well, I plant 58 different crops inside straw bales instead of in the dirt, which means no bending, no weeding, no bugs. It's a lot easier to harvest things because by the end of the season, the straw bales have all broken down and then I can mulch my flower beds with those. Oh, and I don't even do any watering because I have it all on a timer system. It's super easy.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, that's great. So now you were on episode 165 and we're up to about episode 280 or so. And so you were on in March 2018. So for those listeners who haven't listened to that episode yet, but you may go back to episode 165 and listen to it. Remind listeners who Deb Calvert is and what you do when you do travel, and about what you've authored, not just the most recent book.
Well, my company, 15 years this next month, is People First Productivity Solutions, and we build organizational strength by putting people first. There are three arms of the business: team effectiveness, leadership development, and sales productivity. And what they all have in common, of course, is it's about getting people connected. The book, Stop Selling and Start Leading, that we talked about two whole years ago. I can't believe it. That is based on research with buyers, and my co-authors, Jim Kouzis and Barry Posner, are very well known in the domain of leadership development. The book is all about what buyers want. It's based on research with buyers, and it turns out that buyers would really like sellers to step into their full potential as leaders and to show up with leadership behaviors when they call on buyers. My first book was also based on research with buyers, 25 years of research now into that one. It's Discover Questions, Get You Connected.
And the findings from that research were that always be closing, like Glengarry, Glenn Ross, Alec Baldwin, not very effective, right?
No, ABC really should mean always be connecting. That's what buyers want. They want real dialogue. They want to be genuinely involved in relevant, meaningful ways. And they want salespeople to be more authentic and less salesy.
So before we get to talking about the pandemic and how it's affecting the listeners' world and your thoughts on what folks should be doing and thinking in light of it, remind us about the actual research. I seem to recall it was a rather large study of over 500 buyers.
You bet. It was a Qualtrics panel study conducted through Santa Clara University. It's been written up now in a bunch of academic journals, and it was 530 B2B buyers. And we asked them about certain behaviors, the ones that in Jim and Barry's research are associated with effective leadership. We asked them about 30 behaviors and how they would respond if sellers more frequently demonstrated those behaviors. And for every single one of the 30, it was compelling. It was clear that buyers were saying, yeah, if a seller did that more frequently, I'd be more likely to meet with that seller. I'd be more likely to buy from that seller. And that seller would be differentiated in my mind. That's the person I want to come calling on me.
I remember when I interviewed you 2 years ago, I couldn't resist. I had to make the joke, you know, what do women want? And we didn't talk about that. We talked about what do sellers want? Or excuse me, what do buyers want? And what are some of those things that the buyers said, yeah, that's kind of what I want?
Well, some of them are super obvious, things like being treated with dignity and respect. Less obvious, and it came out in their comments, were things like, I want everyone in my organization to be treated with dignity and respect. I don't want you to treat the receptionist or the person who answered the phone any differently than the way you treat me. And that's a big hang up for them. They want sellers to engage them in a true two-way dialogue, as opposed to it being, I'm just asking you my qualifying questions and I'm racing ahead to pounce on whatever need you might bring up and I'm coming back to you with some sort of solution I created in a vacuum. And another super obvious one, but really important, buyers want sellers to do what they say they will do, to live up to their promises and commitments, trust at the beginning because of what you said already, Glengarry, Glenn Ross, and all those other negative stereotypes are out there. We're battling those. And so at the beginning, when we're coming from a deficit position, buyers judge sellers pretty harshly. And if we slip up even a little, we say we'll call it 9, but we don't call till 9:30. Well, we didn't live up to our promise or commitment, and it's a big strike against us.
Yeah. I remember in the book, you explained about what, you know, like selling is kind of misunderstood and this idea of leadership may be misunderstood. And I was wondering if you could clarify that for us again, where the leadership is not commanding people to do something. It's more about service. Can you talk more about what you mean by leading?
You bet. I think there are a few clarifications that ought to be made. The first is that when we say leadership, we are not talking about management. Those are two entirely different things.
Mm-hmm.
Managers manage. They get today's work done today. Leaders guide. They take people to a new place that they haven't been before but want to be. They chop down the vines that are in the way and they make a path forward. That's what I'm talking about. And leadership is not reserved for a select few. It's not available, accessible only to people who were born with certain traits. Leadership boils down to choices that you make, behavioral choices. And those behaviors are simple, like the ones we already talked about. They're choices you make, they're outward expressions of your intention. And when you're working in a buyer-seller relationship, somebody has to lead. We can't defer to the buyer and expect them to take us to a new place. They won't. Why would they?
Well, and they may not know where they really need to go.
Exactly. They want someone who's going to have confidence and capability to facilitate first a conversation about where is that place, and then to inspire that vision that we now share together. Inspire meaning to breathe life into it over and over again, and to encourage the buyer along the way when the going gets tough inside. They're fighting battles and they're making decisions and they're finding budget and they're saying no to other vendors and relationships. To sustain that, to buoy them while they're doing all that internal work is an important part of leadership too.
Do you think that buying is getting more difficult?
I do, in a way, which is contrary to what some would initially think. At first blush, it looks like it's easier because buyers have more choices than ever. They can do their work online. But buying well has gotten more difficult because of the plethora of choices and the assumptions that you have all the information that you need. I often hear a lot of buyer's remorse that seems to be from sellers not truly leading. And to be fair, buyers not giving them a chance to do that because the buyer mistakenly believed they had all that they needed.
Hmm. Or that they thought they needed.
Yes.
And there was one other thing in the book that I just had to chuckle at. I still remember this, and I'd like you to explain it. And that is, there was a joke about how the related to the Challenger sale, that whole notion, that book from maybe 10 years ago, which I really liked, and how it's really misunderstood by 26-year-olds coming into a company and telling them they're doing something all wrong. Can you unpack all that?
Yeah, I was at a sales 2.0, maybe it was 3.0 event in San Francisco at the time. And I watched a speaker, I don't remember who it was, but it was somebody who represented a brand. And the person on stage said something along the lines of, and I don't need any more 26-year-olds telling me how to run my business and breaking out the Challenger sale and using all that crap with me. And the room burst into thunderous applause. So this was certainly not one person feeling that way. And really, it was unfortunate because there are good takeaways in the Challenger sale. Mm-hmm. But misunderstanding them and putting the cart before the horse, putting the I'm going to go challenge somebody ahead of the relationship that ought to be built, that's a misapplication of what's in there.
It makes me wonder if they even read the book.
Yes.
Oh, I'm supposed to challenge everyone.
Right.
So one question that keeps coming up that I've heard from, you know, people, listeners, I see on social media, people struggling with this, and even a couple of other authors of sales books who, you know, we've touched on this in this hopefully limited time series, about they get this question, is it okay to sell yet? Is it okay to sell now? How does that strike you?
Well, okay, this is also a misunderstanding.
Yes.
Is it okay to sell now? Yeah. Is it okay to sell now implies that there's something wrong with selling or that you're doing something to somebody else. What I think is important to note here is that the original word sell, it came from sellen, and it meant to provide something that someone needs. And the original word for buy, beckon, meant to accept something that you need. So the intersection of buying and selling is all about a need. And selling ought to happen anytime, every time that there's a need that you can meet. If you don't think it's okay to be selling right now, the real question you need to be asking is, why aren't you finding the people who need what you have? And if you would say, nobody needs what I have right now, Well, that's a whole other conversation that we need to have, because that's either inaccurate or, wow, maybe it's time to to be thinking about a different place. There are people who need what you have, regardless of these current circumstances. And yes, people's focus is divided right now, but there are still needs, and there might be more work we have to do to figure out who needs and could be talking to us about those needs. But don't forget that it's all about the intersection, the need.
So what comes to mind for me is one listener to the Marketing Podcast who is the head of sales and marketing for a hotel in Charleston, South Carolina, near the convention center. So what would, now he's fine. He's had a long, successful career, so I'm sure he's doing just fine. But what would somebody in that instance be doing if, I'm guessing here, they might be calling up people that they've been talking to in the past, and maybe all their events are closed. What would somebody in that somewhat extreme situation, what might they be doing?
Yeah, that is an extreme situation. And yet, there's going to be, at least everyone I've talked to says there's going to be some, there's a demand that's building up. People mm-hmm. are going to want to travel. I know I do. People are going to want same space events. People are going to want partners that they can rely on for cleanliness and for safety standards and for this next normal that we're going to enter into. So I would want someone to tell me about what an event's going to look like in the future and how they're going to protect me and how they're going to, if there should be some other outbreak or need to scale back, how they're going to honor the fact that these are extraordinary circumstances and our contract needs to be modified. The needs are a little different. It's not buy the venue space today, book the rooms now. It's let's make sure that you understand that I understand. And I feel your fear and your apprehensions, and let's work on those together. So it's partly information gathering, and it's relationship nurturing, and it's stepping in as a leader to guide somebody, help them see what the next is going to look like.
Great answer. And especially the part about building the relationship. And my sense is that, let's say it's a meeting planner or a convention planner or something like that. They probably need somebody to talk to. They've probably got their own clients
yes.
worried and asking what they should be doing and thinking about. Now, and that's probably one of the more extreme examples. I mean, I'm thinking like, if, let's say you're in charge of sales for a cruise ship line or something like that. That's at the other end. Most other things that are sold, there's still a need for it.
Absolutely. And even the cruise industry, they're canceling people's vacations left and right. But someday, those people who had a budget for, a deposit on, a need or desire to take a trip someplace, are they going to do it with your cruise line, or are they going to go somewhere else? So there's work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Are you getting questions from your world? And what are some of the things that some of your clients are struggling with or wondering how to figure out?
Well, the question is, what can we do in the interim? So at first it was full stop, halt, brakes. We got to scramble and figure out which end is up. And then the question became more about, okay, well, we don't know exactly when things are going to open up, and we're a little tentative. We don't want to overcommit, but what can we be doing in the meantime? And in the meantime, for example, with team effectiveness work, well, you've really got to have a team together to do what I believe is true, building up of strong bonds between team members. But there are some foundational pieces that we can lay, and the assessment work that we can do ahead of time. So I think it's about not cut, paste, pretend it all could be virtual. It's about looking for very strategically how this makes sense to roll it out gradually. I'm getting a lot of calls. Thank goodness I had a digital agency a few years back who had the foresight to push me into this. But I'm getting a lot of calls about what can we do right now with webinars or virtual training, because we've got employees who are getting a little bored, and we see an opportunity for learning and development to to be offered now. When they get back, they're going to be super busy, but how can we use this time wisely right now?
So have you been getting requests for additional training and things like that?
I have. I'm lucky because of that agency and what they did. They forced me to add some web pages that I otherwise wouldn't have about webinar offerings. And they helped me get optimized for webinar and e-learning and virtual training and some terms that are making my phone ring. So I'm pretty busy and I feel fortunate for that. I know that's not true for a lot of folks.
Yes. Well, that's great that you were poised to help like that. Are some of the, as it relates to the team work that you do, were some of them suddenly thrust into this virtual environment?
Oh yeah. And I've had several things that I've had to rebook or just push it out until they don't know when. Something that was going to happen in May for a large company, a team of 40. So two parts of an organization that weren't quite effectively handing off and talking to each other. We've tentatively set a date in August, but that even has a question mark around it because they just don't know. And in their state, they have pushed out the we're opening back up conversation quite a bit. So it's up in the air, but I'm still looking and we're still finding ways to nibble around the edges and to prepare that group for when we eventually can get together.
Are you getting a lot of questions about the topic of virtual sales?
Not as many as I might have anticipated. I think sales is a little slower. The calls I'm getting the most are about leadership development. And people are hungry for that, ready for that, feel that they can do that on their own. In sales, I think what's holding back some of those conversations are the ideas about what's going to happen next. Are we always going to be working virtually? And if so, maybe we do need that. But if we're going to go back to the way things were before, this is just a temporary situation, and we don't want to invest a lot of time in that. So when I have conversations, that's sort of the dialogue that there's a bit of resistance to go all in on virtual for selling.
Yes. It just makes me wonder how much was virtual before. I don't know. For me, it's sort of like it was nice knowing that I could always go get on a plane or, you know, go visit a client or do that sort of thing. But the fact is, it seems like most of the time, once we'd established a relationship, hopefully with some face-to-face, at least early on, I've started to reflect back on how long we're able to keep going without even seeing each other. And so it makes me think, you know, well, maybe we weren't using as much. I mean, it's always better to get together with folks, but in certain instances, we have not skipped a beat, but I think that's because we had already had a good, solid working relationship, and this was an existing client.
Well, and this is quite specific to industry and size of deal that you sell. Some industries, salespeople never ever meet the clients that they serve for years. Mm-hmm. It's all by phone, and some have started using Zoom and other virtual platforms so they at least get some FaceTime. But in other places, it's deeply entrenched that we do business in person, that we have relationships, that we fill in the blank, something in person. And it's in their minds going to put them at a competitive disadvantage. Nobody wants to be first to make sort of a shift to inside selling before this or virtual selling after this. So they're struggling to figure out what their go-to-market strategies look like.
Yeah, well, I guess if nobody's traveling right now, just like you aren't, it's sort of like nobody really has that advantage right now. It's maybe in the same city, but even then, you don't want to get together with folks too much. It just seems like it's harder to kick off a relationship virtually if you're not used to doing that.
It is, and I'll make a big generalization here too. A lot of salespeople gravitate to sales roles because they are people. They're very extroverted. They rely maybe even too heavily on their ability to have a great rapport with someone, to strike up a conversation, to do the face-to-face thing. And they would opt out. Many of them would opt out if they didn't have that level of interaction. That's why inside and outside salespeople are often not the same stripe. They have different makeup. They choose partly because of how comfortable and how desirable it is for them to be with people.
Yeah, and maybe a little bit about, I may be one of those people where I just wanted to get together with folks, but what are, you know, we're always saying sales has changed. Actually, I think that's the way people buy has changed. But what are some of the changes that you have seen in what effective salespeople do when you started your career versus what you're seeing now? Is it more similar things, or are there certain things that are now more important than when you started your career?
Well, tech is certainly a big factor. And so if we're to say sales has changed, way back when I was first selling, there was no such thing as a CRM. You didn't have an opportunity to figure out, because you had a recording of your call and got some coaching and it helped you understand your cadence. You didn't know what your win-loss ratios were. You know, there's just so much that information that you did not have, and so many tools and resources and efficiencies that were not available then.
I think even when you and I started out, we didn't have caller ID, and I definitely didn't have email.
No, none of that.
Yeah. It was the telephone.
I remember when I got my first pager, so.
That was actually kind of revolutionary, this pager. For the younger people, what she's talking about. No, I'm just kidding. So the tech.
Yes. And I think that's good and bad. I do think tech and enablement can get in the way of selling if we don't use it correctly. It should be a tool and an enhancement to a relationship, not a replacement for it.
Yes. There's an author I've interviewed a couple times who you may know, Mike Weinberg. And he's in Missouri as well, I believe.
Other side of the state.
Side of the state. Oh, one of those other side of the state people. Okay.
Yes, them.
So he's always, you know, he and many others are talking about how he never saw somebody not make their quota or not be successful because they didn't have the latest tool. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was interesting. In other words, he's always saying the basics are still the basics.
Yep.
No matter what's going on.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I think he and I are like-minded in that way. I wouldn't go so far as to say that there aren't useful adaptations that we can make. Personally believe that if you have a well-rounded approach to selling, you've got the right sales hacks, you've got the right tech stack, you've got the right inbound strategy, and you've got the skills and the knowledge and the traits to go out there and do sales the way sales has always been done. Finding a need, meeting a need, persisting enough in the right way as a leader to step in and fill that need with that client and involving them so that they're putting their own personal imprint on it.
And that brings me back to what you're talking about in terms of leadership and teamwork. There's this saying that I keep seeing called people, process, and technology. And I can't remember which books I've seen it. Maybe it was yours. I'm sorry. But they talk about how a lot of times an organization will want to buy the technology because they think that will then lead them to the right process, and then their people will be more effective. And most are saying, look, you got to start with the people and solve that problem, and then follow a process which doesn't necessarily need the technology, and then the technology should come last if it's helping an existing process.
Yeah, those are not exactly my words, but that's absolutely how I feel about the approach to any business that you do. It's why for 15 years I've been running this company called People First Productivity Solutions.
I must have read it in your it's after a few hundred of these books, though, they're all kind of merging together, and I start to see pattern matching where it's a lot of authors are talking about it because there's this need or there's this desire to say, well, we don't have a sales process. I'm making this up. We don't have a sales process, but if we start using a CRM, we'll start following a process.
Nope.
But don't you see companies that are thinking that?
Absolutely. Yes. I work with companies who think that.
And then they call you. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So the evolution of business, it's only in the last decade, and in some cases less, where we've had an emphasis on customer experience and now more recently, employee experience. And both of those movements are all about putting people first. The problem is when they get oversaddled with process and tech to have the customer experience, process and tech to have the employee experience, you're leaving out the most important part. Customer, employee, those words are people words. And it has to start with the right philosophy. And culture stems from that. And everything else is subsidiary to your people and your culture.
Well, Deb, any other thoughts about what people should be keeping in mind as they're going through a situation which might be not so good right now and there's a lot of uncertainty?
Yeah, I think it's really important to say this, and it's really the only novel thing I have to say about this time that we're in and the uncertainty and in some cases the tragedies that are happening all around us. It seems that everyone has felt compelled to say something or do something or offer something. And it's why every commercial we hear starts with that very empathetic tone in these uncertain times. You know?
Yes.
And I'm getting fatigued by the emails from everybody that I've ever heard of or done business with. Suddenly they pulled out and dusted off their old list and they've written these, you know, compassionate sounding, well-meaning emails, but they aren't authentic feeling, and it becomes opportunistic seeming. So I like to tell people it's okay to say nothing. You don't have to have the words, and you don't have to say the words everyone else is saying. I actually, for the first time in 15 years, I put my two blogs that I write each week and my newsletters that I send each week on a pandemic pause. And I did that because I didn't have anything unique to say, and I don't believe that more of the same is all that useful. So I've been reaching out and talking with people one-to-one instead. And it's not that I have answers or solutions. It's that I'm interested in knowing how you're doing, what's going on with you. And that's the whole conversation. That works for me. It may not work for everyone, but I want people to know it's an option and it's okay.
Oh, I think you just made a whole lot of people feel a lot better. You don't have to be sending a message. And I don't know if you've seen it, but there's this video compilation of all these TV commercials, and it's called All COVID Ads Are the Same. Mm. I'll send you a copy, and I'll also include I'll include that video in this episode's show notes at marketingbookcocktails.com, where people can go and see, get links to your business and your past interview on the Marketing Book podcast and so forth. But it's, you see that and you think, oh, and I don't want to beat up on all these companies because part of it may be driven by their legal team saying you've got to say some message or something, and everyone wants to feel like they're doing something. I mean, I probably started this series just because I felt like I needed to do something, and I wanted to help. And I appreciate you coming on, but I think what you just said is such an interesting opening line. If you call up a customer or a prospect or a friend and you just say, what's going on with you? What's going on with you? You know, I'm just curious.
No, and I ask people, what are you experiencing there? Because I don't know, and I wouldn't want to assume that what's happening in New Jersey is the same as what's happening here in Missouri. And sure, we've got some common ground, but why would I assume that or start with that? And I've heard some incredible stories that people haven't had a chance to necessarily tell the other vendors and business relationship folks that they have. So it's been interesting, and it has created some good bonds, and I've had a lot of people express just appreciation for the humanity of it. So, it fits me. It doesn't necessarily fit everyone. I get that.
I think it's a great thing for folks just to call people up and say, hey, we haven't spoken in a while. What's going on with you? Mm-hmm. And if they want to talk about business, they can, but I think they would really appreciate the call. So,
yes.
And notice I use the word call.
Yes.
There's this smart device that we have in our pockets, which if you press a few of the right buttons, you can actually speak to another person.
And it's a glorious thing.
Yes, I know. And I know I sound like an old guy, and I am, but I'm thinking about my kids who are in their 20s, and I'm not sure, I joke, I'm not sure that they ever speak on their phones very much because they're always communicating in another way. But at any rate, well, Deb Calvert, I really appreciate the opportunity to catch up with you again and welcome you back for this hopefully short time series of Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. And what was the, I took your picture, which I'm going to include it, marketingbookcocktails.com. What was that bottle that you had that had your last name on it?
Oh, that is part of my vintage collection of Calvert whiskey bottles, little ones. That one was Calvert Reserve.
And where is this whiskey of which you speak? Where is it from?
Well, that is a good question. Calvert whiskey is actually distilled in the U.S. now, or up till the time when it stopped. But originally, I believe it was from Scotland. So you'd probably like it.
And are you the heiress to the Calvert whiskey fortune?
No relation whatsoever. Okay. Not even my husband's, but we like it because it carries our name.
Yes, and you're clearly a great brand ambassador. And you know what? We may actually have to just hop on the Twitter and share that with those nice people from Scotland.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Where they're making it, yes.
Well, no, I don't think they're in business at all anymore, I'm hardly an expert on it. So,
Well, Deb Calvert, you know what that means? It means you didn't drink enough of it when you could.
That's because I was too busy drinking things like this lovely red drink that I showed you, which is made of blossoms from my redbud tree. I made a simple syrup out of, I'm getting creative, right, in the pandemic downtime.
Yes, but it's a beautiful drink. And again, that picture is going to be there as well, so people can see it. It looked very nice. So,
scene one, Apple, take two.
An addendum to what Deb Calvert just said, after we got off this call, she sent me an email that said, my husband just let me know that I made two mistakes. Calvert whiskey used to be made in Canada, not Scotland, and it is still in production. So, of course, that sent me doing some research, and I looked it up. And according to Wikipedia, Calvert is a blended whiskey produced in Claremont, Kentucky, and owned by Luxco, which is headquartered in St. Louis, Missouri, Missouri being the same state as Deb Calvert. So there you are. Apologies to anybody associated with Calvert whiskey. And if you want to send me a bottle of it, just please let me know and I'll get you the right addresses. Please send the first bottle to Mr. and Mrs. Calvert. And if you have another bottle, please send it my way. Now back to the conclusion of Deb Calvert, Authors in Quarantine, Getting Cocktails. Well, Deb, I hope that you and your husband and everyone in your world continues to stay healthy and safe and sane, and we look forward to seeing you back on the road, hopefully sooner rather than later.
I'm all for that. Thank you so much, and I think this was a great idea. It's nice to talk with you again, and people are looking. They're looking for good information, and that's what you give them, so thank you.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.